Today is June the 8th, 2015. We are gathered as the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for the purpose of a work session on Senate Bill 306A relating to levee infrastructure. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 306A relating to levee infrastructure and ask Mr. Bender to give us an introduction.
Billy. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. You have a work session. You've opened a work session on Senate Bill 306. I would let you know. I would like to note that we do have LFO work session recommendations posted to OLIS. I will primarily be going through that packet of materials in this explanation. Senate Bill 306 is a bill that you had a public hearing on May 13th. What the bill does is it adds levee inspection and repair projects to the list of qualified uses of monies in the Special Public Works Fund. The Special Public Works Fund is administered by the Infrastructure Finance Authority within OBDD. The bill would allow the Special Public Works Fund to be used to provide loans and grants to local governments and other entities for purposes of levee inspection and repair projects. Eligible entities would include, for receiving the assistance, would include drainage districts, corporations or companies, as well as nonprofit entities, for-profit entities, and individuals. This is a fund, the Special Public Works Fund, that is funded by loan repayments and loan-related charges to borrowers and interest earnings. The legislature occasionally adds money to the fund as well, typically from lottery bond proceeds. Another aspect of this bill is that it authorizes the Water Resources Department to inspect, evaluate, consult, map, and certify levees. This is all with the permission of the levee owners. In terms of administrative costs, OBDD's administrative costs relating to this particular bill and to establishing the levy loan and grant program can be covered within its available resources. So in that sense, the fiscal impact is minimal. That is for the administrative costs. For the actual funding for loans and grants, the agency has asked for $7 million in lottery bond proceeds to be specifically dedicated for the Special Public Works Fund for the purpose of financing the levy grant, the levy loans and grants. This request is found in POP 106 in the OBDD budget request. It's the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation that this bill not include, or that you do not include any specific budget adjustments for the agency with this bill, for the reason that they are able to absorb the administrative costs and that the additional funding request for the $7 million will be considered in the lottery bond authorization bill and not in this bill. The bill also has no revenue impact. And we also recommend no changes to the Water Resource Department budget. The Water Resource Department would be able to exercise new authorities under this bill, but we do not know to what extent or what the requirements and costs will be to them, if any, as a result of the bill. So we are not recommending any adjustment to their budget either. That said, there is one recommended amendment that we have to the bill, which has been distributed and was discussed also at the May 13th public hearing. Those are the Senate Bill 306-A2 amendments. The Senate Bill 306-A2 amendments amend the bill to delete levy certification from the new authorities granted to the Water Resources Department. The levy certification, or the certification that levees do meet federal standards, would continue, as is currently the case, to be performed by engineers working in the private sector. That completes our my discussion of the bill and of the recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender?
Yeah, I do.
Representative Whitson.
Looking at the memorandum from Legislative Fiscal, which still includes certifying levies for water resources. The bill also authorizes Water Resources Department to inspect, evaluate, consult, map, and certify levies. But this just came out today.
Correct, so, Representative. That is the dash A version that is before you.
Right.
If you approve the dash A2 version, the Water Resources Department would continue to have all of those new authorities except for the certification of levies. So they would still, after it was amended, if you approve those amendments, you would be authorizing the Water Resources Department to inspect, evaluate, consult, and map the levies, but not to certify that they meet federal standards.
And excuse me, so that would only be left up to engineers, I assume, from the Corps or something? Or
I think that it contemplated private sector engineering firms to do that work. That's what the amendment contemplates.
Okay. If I may follow up, then.
Follow up.
Would they contract or subcontract with the engineers then, the water resources? Would the certification come through the water resources through outside in a like a memorandum of agreement or something?
I think
like
it would be a consultation.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, other questions? All right, we are in work session. Colleagues, you have heard the recommendation on the amendments and LFO recommending the amendments. And so I would entertain a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I'd move adoption of the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 306A.
Thank you. You have heard the motion by Co-Chair Gomberg. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections? They are adopted.
Madam Co-Chair, then I would move Senate Bill 306A as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Colleagues, you have heard Co-Chair Gomberg's motion. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We now need carriers. And I would be happy to do full and the Senate. Any volunteers on the House side?
I'm not seeing anybody else make eye contact, so
Representative Gomberg volunteers bravely. Okay. Thank you. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 306A and open a public hearing on House Bill 2280A relating to the Oregon Growth Board. And Eric is procuring the sign-up sheet. Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I might make a couple of opening comments on it. I'm happy to do it here or go around here at your pleasure.
Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a bill related to the Oregon Growth Board, which people can probably remember. And as I'm saying this, it occurs to me that I may be jumping the queue. Steve, if you wanted to say anything, and then I could add a little more context. I'm not sure if that would
Be part of the Let's
plan.
Actually start with the LFO introduction, and then we'll come back to you.
Sorry about that. Thank you.
Mr. Bender.
Thank you. House Bill 2280 is relating to the Oregon Growth Board. The Oregon Growth Board was established in 2012, and its primary functions are to administer or to manage and invest monies in two funds that the state holds. One is the Oregon Growth Account, and the other is the Oregon Growth Fund. In 2013, you provided the Oregon Business Development Department with one half-time position for their administrative responsibilities relating to the new Oregon Growth Board. The Oregon Growth Board, what House Bill 2280 makes three changes to existing law relating to the Oregon Growth Board. The first of those changes is to change the makeup of membership of the board. The bill, as it is introduced, and you have amendments that have been distributed, but the A and Gross version of the bill, as it is introduced, changes the director of the Oregon Business Development Department from being a non-voting member to being a voting member of the board, and adds an additional position to the board as well. There are the second thing that the bill does, as it is before you, is it specifically places the administration of the Oregon Growth Board within the Oregon Business Development Department. Existing law is somewhat unclear in that although the existing law charges OBDD with providing administrative support to the board, it does not actually place the board within OBDD. So this bill would actually do that and would change the appropriations so that the appropriations would go to OBDD instead of directly to the board as an independent entity. Excuse me. Finally, the third thing that the bill does is the bill changes requirements on the investments of monies in the two accounts that the board manages. These two accounts, again, are the Oregon Growth Account, which is an account that receives 10% of the money that is deposited into the Education Stability Fund. The Education Stability Fund receives 18% of lottery revenues. Therefore, the Oregon Growth Account receives 10% of that, or 1.8% of lottery revenues. If you're wondering what amount of dollars we're talking about here, that is equivalent to approximately $20 million in the 2015-17 biennium. The Oregon Growth Account is one of the funds that is managed by the Oregon Growth Board. The other is the Oregon Growth Fund, which was established in 2013, that is not a part of the Education Stability Fund, and which provides the board with a somewhat greater leeway in the uses or investments of those monies, as it is outside of the of an endowment fund that is constitutionally established. What the bill would do is, under current law, the Oregon Growth, the investments in both of these accounts are required, do have requirements that the investments have some impact on Oregon business. The requirements are that generally the way these investments are made is that the growth board enters into a partnership as a limited partner with a management company that is going to make investments. As an example, the Oregon Growth Board may agree to commit $5 million to a manager that is trying to raise $50 million, or 10% of the total. Current law requires that the Oregon Growth Board require the management company to then invest at least $5 million in total out of the $50 million in companies that are located in Oregon. This requires, since this is a partnership, this requires the partners who are providing, in this example, the other $45 million to also agree to this requirement. House Bill 2280 eliminates the requirement that the funds invested by the Oregon Growth Board be invested in the state of Oregon.
Okay, thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Mr. Bender? Is that Representative Whitson?
I just have one. Is the $83,968 for 2 years, so it would be $46,000 a year for half-time position? Is that how they read
correct.
That rate?
Correct.
And if I may follow up, does that include benefits, or is that a straight salary? Is that a compensation package, or is that...
That would include other personnel expenses, benefit costs, and some S&S costs associated with the position.
Okay. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve did an excellent job of that. Thank you. I'm apologizing again for stepping on your toes. I would only add a couple of pieces of context, and starting with quoting you, Senator Johnson, out of an abundance of caution, Senator Hansel and I are the ex officio non-voting members from the Senate and the House on the Growth Board. I think there is a lot to be excited about as to the board's activities, a lot of good progress in making investments that are helping grow the economy in Oregon. Steve did a good job of describing the different pools of funds that are available for different purposes. This bill, I think, in essence, makes it easier for the Growth Board to do its job, both in terms of the processes, as was described, in relationship to DAS and the way those processes work, makes the Business Development Department director a voting member, And this issue, the side letter, is really significant. I know John Finney's here who can talk about that specifically. But the idea of having some significant opportunities that we're not able to take advantage of that would accrue to the benefit of the state, this gives the board the ability to pursue those in a way that is not currently available. So we think it's a good thing for us to pursue.
Thank you for that context. Let me note for the record that Senator Hansel is excused, and he told me prior to his inability to be here. We have two people signed up to testify, Beth Cook and Mr. Finney. And if you want to come up together separately, your choice. Anyone else wishing to provide public testimony? Mr. Trummer, I will add you to the sign-up sheet. Good afternoon. I don't care what order you bat in.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Ivo Trummer with the Oregon Business Development Department. I just wanted to clarify the Dash A4 amendments because we asked for those. We apologize, in the first place, for the kind of the detour we have taken. The director started out as a non-voting ex officio member. We then asked to have a vote added to it, but we have come to the conclusion as a department of the director that we would like to send a designee to the board, in this case, the Assistant Director for Innovation Entrepreneurship. There was hesitancy to make the vote, if you will, travel with the designated person to go, so we stepped back and said, let's keep it the way it used to be as an ex officio non-voting member, but add designee in there, so that's what the Dash A4 does. So,
my apologies.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Trummer? And we have that amendment. I'm looking at it.
Yes, okay. It has also been posted to all of us.
Good. Okay.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify, and we asked for that, and we hope that you would consider the amendment when
Thank
the time
you.
Comes. Thank you.
All right.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Beth Cook, and I am the executive director of the Oregon Growth Board. I am the half-time position that was put in place this biennium to set up the growth board and get all the processes and procedures in place. Mr. Bender did a fantastic job of explaining the bill, the House Bill 2280, that the board has requested. And as Mr. Trummer mentioned, the bill currently with the A4 amendment would add two additional members to the board, two additional voting members, for a total of 9 members. Currently, there is a geographic as well as industry preference requirement for our board members, and so if you can imagine that as someone is designated, for instance, a credit union representative from Congressional District 4, it ends up kind of locking in the members as to what kind of industries they may be from and where geographically they may be located. So this would allow the board with additional flexibility. And also, this is a working board. They do, as Senator Hansel would tell you, as Representative Reed has told you, would tell you, this board has put in a tremendous amount of work every month in order to bring the investments forward, to provide advice to staff. And so expanding to 9 members would be very, very beneficial and would be very beneficial to the board. And again, it was also administrative. The Oregon Growth Fund is currently being housed because it was a little bit ambiguous in previous legislation as to where those monies would be, whether or not they'd be under the growth, the OBDD, or that they'd be under, so they're under DAS currently. And so that requires, so for instance, if I have an invoice that needs to be paid from the Oregon Growth Fund, that requires not only my board member signatures, my signature has to go through OBDD and then go to DAS. So it's an administrative function that can, this would help streamline that process in order, as the growth board becomes more of an integral part to Business Oregon, it'd be nice to actually have that housed within that agency. And then I will go ahead and let John Finney from CTC Consulting talk a little bit more about the side letter requirement.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I thought today it might be helpful to go through some of the
history. Would you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, my name is John Finney. I work with CTC, my CFO, the consultant to the Oregon Growth Board. To give some context in terms of what the side letter is, this is a legal agreement that was drafted by the Department of Justice that is given to each of the managers that receive a commitment from the legacy Oregon Growth Account Board, now the Oregon Growth Board. Any investments that those funds receive, they must sign a side letter stating, much like Mr. Bender described, stating that they would invest an equal, if not greater, amount back into the state of Oregon into a company or multiple companies here in the state. What we have experienced over time, and this side letter has not always been a feature of the Oregon Growth Account. This came into place in 2008. It was in recognition that it's important the capital that is invested through the Educational Stability Fund be invested in Oregon-based companies. We take that very seriously. We wanted to make sure that there was some emphasis behind that, and that came in the form of this legal contract causing the managers to do what we hoped they would do. What we learned over time is that this side letter actually has become more of a deterrent, really, to the funds that we would like to include within this portfolio. Oftentimes, we'll talk to managers that we'll go very far in the process with, and then find out sometimes at the 11th hour that they've decided that they really are not having difficulty raising capital. And all things considered, one being offered with strings attached, the other no strings attached, they'd rather work with the group that has no strings attached. The side letter is really it's a document that is much longer than just this one term. It has a lot of legal requirements that we would want all of our managers to sign off on. Oftentimes, it's best practices about audits, advisory boards, et cetera. The one term that's being changed here is no longer would managers be required to invest that equal, if not greater, amount into the state. Rather, it would give the board the discretion to make the determination whether that side letter should have that term or not. And we've been working with a number of managers locally, realizing that there's a lot of capital that has already made a concerted effort to get to know the Oregon landscape quite well. They've invested heavily in this region, and we're expecting them to continue to do that because they've found opportunity here even without an investment. And we would like to be able to work with them and offer in return a side letter that does not include this term. And that's what the ask is today.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions?
I did have just one other.
Ms. Cook.
I also wanted the fiscal on this, the $89,968, it's also reflected in the POP 109 request for OBDD.
Thank you. I guess I have a question. When this concept was first floated, the whole idea was to invest in Oregon.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And particularly the fact that it's Educational Stability Fund money that is being applied.
Yeah.
It was the cycle that was all Oregon, and I understand that there may be more opportunistic investments that do not include Oregon,
mm-hmm.
but explain to me why going extra Oregon is not contrary to the whole notion that is embedded in this enterprise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one observation is that, and this is an entity that's been around since the late 90s. We have tried investing locally in funds that are based here, that are investing only in companies that are based here. As many of you probably have your own portfolios, and I'm sure it's been beaten into everybody, the diversification is a good thing in a lot of ways. That's not dissimilar to the funds that we're investing in. It just so happens the resident capital that's here is not robust. I think there are a number of groups that are trying to emerge and be the next great fund manager in Oregon. However, it takes time for that to develop. So in the interim, we have to look outside of the state, and oftentimes these are adjacent states that are already looking at Oregon in many ways for opportunities. And oftentimes, too, a lot of the other markets, if you think about just to the north and just to the south of us, those markets are very healthy. I would say prices, the valuations of companies are to the point where many managers don't want to go anymore, so they're looking for opportunities elsewhere, and it just so happens that Oregon has a number of opportunities that they find appealing. And therefore, we are looking at them and recognizing that there's an opportunity to not be so geographically concentrated and also hopefully have some good returns on investment.
Thank you. I would just conclude by saying I understand what you just said, but to me that is violative of the whole construct.
Can I add something to that, Madam Chair?
Yeah, before you pop. Yes. Representative Reed.
I think there's two sort of ways to break what Ms. Finney said down even further. One is that there's regional impact. Even if something happens to be on the other side of the Columbia River, for example, it may have a huge impact on the Oregon economy. And the notion of what is an Oregon company is an interesting one. Does it mean that's where their address is? Does it mean that's where their sales are? Does it mean that's where their employees are? That's one piece of it. And the other is just how long it takes to develop the relationship. So if there's an up-and-coming fund who doesn't yet know about all the great things that are in Oregon, being involved in that is another way for them to learn about what is here and what is growing in Oregon.
Would not taking the position from half-time to full-time help address that question about developing the relationship?
I think it absolutely does also help. I think those two things go together.
Would there be anything wrong with finding out how much more relationship development could occur with a one FTE versus half-time and then come back if we were not finding it productive?
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Finney can and Ms. Cook can certainly answer this with specifics, but I recall several instances in this first iteration of the growth board where there were opportunities that were interesting to the board, but for this opportunity, this side letter issue. So they should probably answer that.
Chair Johnson, Representative Reed, that is the case. Actually, there were a number of investment opportunities that the board was not able to make that are with organizations that are investing in Oregon that would be fantastic partners to encourage them to do more in Oregon with investment that they were not willing, unfortunately, to sign the side letter. And so we were not able to create those partnerships.
And to put some context around that, since this board went live on January 1st, 2014, there have been three funds, actually four funds, that have basically we've gone through the entire process with that have raised over $1 billion worth of capital that is now not going to be in partnership with us. They may still find opportunities here, but that's capital that is not going to be part of the overall portfolio that could be invested here. We also have another roughly $1 billion in fundraising that's taking place right now that we believe we can get access to if the side letter is not in place. To follow up on your question also, since inception, and some of this is a little bit dated, but $122 million worth of committed capital has resulted in $194 million of investment in Oregon-based companies. There is a greater multiplier effect that's taking place right now as a function of these larger funds that are becoming part of the portfolio.
How much of your funds are currently uncommitted?
Uncommitted, we have, I think it's about 30 million. I'm sorry, I don't have the data in front of me, but I believe it's about 30 or plus or minus.
And that's within the Oregon Growth Account. Within the Oregon Growth Fund, we are fully committed for this biennium. We have approximately $80,000. There might be some little minor edges in there. I know, Mr. Bender, we provided that data earlier this week for the carryover for into this biennium, but we have a commitment, for instance, that's been made that would actually subscribe those dollars as well for the $1.9 million.
I have to excuse myself for another meeting. Carry on.
Thank you.
Anything else? She should have stayed.
Thank you for your time.
Not at all. Is there anybody else here that wants to add to the commentary on 2280? Well, seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and conclude the public hearing. Mr. Bender, anything else that we need to take care of today?
There's nothing you need to take care of today. Just as an announcement, tomorrow you're scheduled to hold two public hearings on Senate Bill 786 and on Senate Bill 946.
All right. So we're on notice. We've got work sessions tomorrow. Whichever chamber has a quorum first, we'll get ice cream from the other side. And I'll go ahead and conclude today's business. Thank you. I'll go ahead and conclude.